Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Chief Justice William Ray Price, Jr.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Thank you. Speaker Tilley took care of me with a podium. Speaker Tilley, President Pro Tem Mayor, members of the General Assembly, it's my honor to give this 38th State of the Judiciary Address. First, I would like to introduce to you my wife, Susan. Susan, stand up. Thank you. I didn't do that last year. That's right. Not the same mistake twice in a row. I'd like to thank you all. Thank you for making the opportunity for me to come give this speech so soon after the last snowstorm. When I woke up this morning, I started to think maybe I was snake bit. I may bore you to death today. My speech is twice as long as it should be, but you may regret it, but I will be very happy to have it over, believe me. I have never seen a more challenging time for our state. Regardless of our political philosophies, one thing is clear. Significant cuts have been made. Significant cuts will have to be made to the budget. To the extent necessary and possible, the courts have shared and will continue to share in spending reductions without complaint. The Missouri court system, the third separate but equal branch of government, operates on less than 2% of the state budget. Yet in 2010, we heard more than 101,000 contract cases, 42,000 landlord-tenant cases, 17,000 juvenile cases, 12,000 probate cases, 110,000 family and domestic cases, 41,000 felony cases, 115,000 misdemeanor cases. Despite the state's economy, whether it is dipping or hopefully recovering, our workload does not diminish. The court system is a core function of government that must perform and perform well for our state to function and thrive. Don't overlook the obvious. Even in this time of economic challenge, we are the greatest civilization in the history of humankind. But we are supported by a free market economy that can exist only within the rule of law. Goods and services can be bought and sold. Money can be exchanged. People can plan for their futures, but only because they can trust in a fair and impartial judiciary to protect their rights and to protect their property. There are two specific concerns that I want to talk with you about. I spoke about them last year, and they are still the two most important things that we face together for the future of Missouri. First, we continue to over-incarcerate nonviolent offenders. While we have failed to expand drug courts and other diversionary and reentry programs to capacity, the result is a state that is not as safe as we want it to be, and a waste of taxpayer dollars. From the 1980s, in Missouri and across the nation, this is not just a Missouri problem. We attempted to incarcerate our way out of crime and illegal drug use. We thought just putting people in jail would make them better or scare them straight. We spent billions of dollars on it, and it did not work. We were tough on crime, but we were not smart on crime. Consider these numbers. In 1982, 612,000 people were behind bars in state prisons across the country. By 2008, that number had risen almost fourfold to 2.3 million people. 612,000 to 2.3 million. In 2010, the United States incarcerated a higher share of its population than any other country in the world. The cost has been staggering. State correctional spending across our country increased from $11.7 billion in 1988 to $47.3 billion in 2008. In an article published just this January, Stanford Law professor Joan Petersilia noted, "What we are seeing today is a recognition that our approach to dealing with convicted criminals is simply too costly. Not only is the price too high, but the benefits are too low. The states now spend an estimated $50 billion on corrections annually, and the growth of these outlays over the past 20 years has outpaced budget increases of nearly all other essential government services." Missouri numbers. We had 5,953 individuals in state prison in 1982. By 2009, the number had grown fivefold to 30,432. 5,953, 30,432. In that same period, from 1982 until 2009, the Department of Corrections budget rose from $55 million to $665 million. It costs more than $16,400 per year to incarcerate an individual, without counting the cost of the prison. The cost of building a prison is about $100 million. For violent criminals, people who endanger men, women, children, there may be little choice. But for many of the 14,700 nonviolent offenders, this prison-based strategy is not working, and it is costing us an arm and a leg. The key measurement of the failure of the strategy is the recidivism rate. That's the number of people who are returned to prison after they have been released. In Missouri, 44.6% of nonviolent offenders are reincarcerated within 2 years of release. 52% of nonviolent offenders are reincarcerated within 3 years of release. 58.5% are reincarcerated within 5 years of release. Over one half of the people released from our penitentiaries are returned within 5 years. A real life example of recidivism is a 35-year-old man from St. Joseph who was arrested for drunk driving on June 16, 2010, just 3 hours after he had been released from prison. Punishment is a necessary part of our criminal justice system, but our real goal for nonviolent offenders is to teach them their lesson so they can become productive, law-abiding members of our society. The goal is not to lock them into a life of crime, to make them permanent wards of the state on an installment program of incarceration after incarceration at $16,400 a year. Newt Gingrich wrote this: "The key to public safety and fiscal sanity is not just getting dangerous people off the streets, but also making sure that men and women who eventually leave prison have changed and can stay crime-free on the outside." Governor Rick Perry of Texas said it this way: "I believe we can take an approach that is both tough and smart There are thousands of nonviolent offenders in the system whose future we cannot ignore. Let's focus more resources on rehabilitating those offenders so we can ultimately spend less money locking them up again. It should be absolutely clear that when one half of the nonviolent offenders are returned to prison after release, we have not taught them the right lessons. And the danger of crime, the millions of dollars of cost to Missouri taxpayers, goes on and on. Over-incarceration of nonviolent offenders has been a big government throw money at the problem strategy that did not and does not work. Despite our tough on crime rhetoric, it is time that we face reality. Prison is the most expensive and least effective strategy for a significant number of nonviolent offenders. All it does is house them in expensive buildings, guard them with state workers, feed and give them health care paid for with precious state dollars, and force nonviolent offenders to associate with more dangerous criminals than they are. By spending all of our money on prison, there's not enough money left to spend on the alcohol and drug treatment and education and job training necessary to break their cycle of crime. Proof's in the numbers. 44.6% are back in 2 years. 58.5% are back in 5 years. A group called Right on Crime, whose members include Grover Norquist, Edwin Meese, William Bennett, said this: "The correction system must align incentives with our goals of public safety, victim restitution and satisfaction, and cost effectiveness, thereby moving a system that grows when it fails, 58.5%, grows when it fails, to one that rewards results." Professor Peter Cilia said it this way: "It should not come as a surprise to learn that we have a correction system that does not correct. Former prisoners account for an estimated 15 to 20% of all arrests among adults. That means thousands of Americans are being victimized every year by criminals who have already done time without experiencing correction. There is a better way. All across the country, states have turned to cheaper, more effective alternative sanctions than prison for nonviolent offenders. Drug carts are one of the best examples of tough, effective, local alternatives to prisons. Depending upon the study, between 60 and 80% of people in prison are there for drug-related crimes or have drug and alcohol issues. Study after study, nationally and in Missouri, have shown that drug courts are the most effective way to deal with drug and alcohol-addicted people at a fraction of the cost of prison. Missouri has more than 9,700 drug court graduates with minimal recidivism. There are other evidence-based criminal sanction strategies, each matched to the particular risk and characteristics of the offender, that also work. They are far less expensive, far more effective than prison. We need to move from anger-based, prison-focused sentencing that ignores cost and effectiveness to evidence-based alternative sanctions that change troubled lives and focus on results. With your help, we have expanded drug courts and DWI courts across Missouri. Unfortunately, they are still underfunded by half. We've barely scratched the surface with family drug courts and reentry courts, but I especially want to tell you about two new pilot programs. First, in Jackson, Greene, St. Louis counties, and St. Louis City, we tested a program to divert juveniles from detention facilities. The program reduced detention admissions by 50% with better results from the juveniles. The savings from this program will be substantial, in the millions. We are expanding it into 5 circuits. The other pilot program is Veterans Court. Veterans Court focuses on returning veterans whose psychological scars from service lead them to drugs and trouble and sometimes violence when they get home. In St. Louis City, Drug Court Commissioner Jim Sullivan has established a Veterans Court with 12 participants. Drug Court Commissioner Phil Britt is in the process of establishing a rural Veterans Court in Wayne, Carter, Ripley, Butler, Stoddard, and Dunklin counties, with a target population of 20 to 25. We owe our veterans this kind of help, but our resources are already being stretched thin. From a moral, a fiscal, and a law and order perspective, drug courts, DWI courts, juvenile diversion programs, veterans courts, reentry courts, community supervision strategies are better investments of taxpayer money for their target populations than prisons. I want to be absolutely clear. I am not advocating that we close prisons, reduce prison populations just to save money. Nonviolent offenders are still lawbreakers, and they will break laws until they learn their lesson. What I am saying is that we need to do a better job teaching nonviolent offenders the right lessons. That takes more than prison. It takes more than slap on the wrist probation. Drug and alcohol addiction must be broken. Discipline and job skills must be learned. That can be done better outside of expensive prison walls. That's what we should do. Results matter. Public safety matters. Taxpayers' dollars matter. Saving lives, restoring families matter. I also want to make clear that this is not a management problem at the Department of Corrections. Director Lombardi, his staff, the probation and parole officers of the state are excellent, dedicated public servants. Because of their leadership and because of the nearly 3,000 drug court diversions each year, we have avoided building at least 2 new prisons. That is $200 million of avoided costs just for the buildings, let alone the tens of millions of dollars of operational cost. Missouri has started in the right direction, but we need to go farther and do better. The people of America are ready for a change. A poll taken last September showed that 86% of Americans agreed that we have too many low-risk, nonviolent offenders in prison. We need alternatives to incarceration that cost less and saves our expensive prison space for violent career criminals. 89% of Americans agreed that 95% of the people in prison will be released. If we are serious about public safety, we must increase access to treatment and job training programs so they can become productive citizens once they are back in the community. 84% of Americans agreed that prisons are a government program. Just like any other government program, they need to be put on a cost-benefit test to make sure taxpayers are getting the best bang for their buck. We need to expand our existing diversionary treatment drug court programs. We need to require, as a condition for early release from prison, education or job training and drug treatment if necessary. We need to establish a more robust program for reentry supervision for those who are released. The reduction in the number of nonviolent offenders that result will more than fund this effort. We need to be tough and smart on crime. Moving from where we are now to where we need to be is the hard part. It will take detailed study and cooperation among the state, the counties, courts, prosecutors, defenders, law enforcement agencies. I am thankful to your leaders, Speaker Tilley and President Pro Tem Mayor, who have joined with Governor Nixon and me in signing a letter seeking a federal justice reinvestment initiative grant. They have shown political courage and the type of bipartisan leadership necessary to make Missouri a safer and better place. Please recognize Speaker Tilley and President Pro Tem Mayor for their far-sighted leadership. The second major issue I want to talk with you about is a fair and impartial judiciary. Solomon is the example of the greatest judge. When he first became king of Israel, the Revised Standard Version of the Bible says that he asked the Lord for an understanding mind to govern thy people, to discern between good and evil. The New Jerusalem Bible and most other translations have Solomon asking for an understanding heart instead. I never have worried about the difference in translation because both are true. A good judge needs an understanding mind and an understanding heart to find justice. It's not easy finding justice. Justice is not a physical thing that you can hold or touch or measure. Often, it is shaped by the eye of the beholder and often relative to the beholder's particular point of view. What seems just to one may seem unjust to another. A good judge must have the courage to accept that not all people will see justice the way he or she does. Sometimes, a good judge must have the courage to risk the anger of the majority to protect the rights of the individual, rights that we prize and are guaranteed by our national and state constitutions. That's why Alexander Hamilton said, "Independence of the judges is requisite to guard the Constitution and rights of individuals." Our job is different than yours. You serve the majority. You make broad policy decisions. You make campaign promises and are expected to uphold them. If something doesn't work, if it's not worded correctly, or if the will of the majority changes, you can change your laws year by year. Our job is more limited. We rule individual case by individual case. Whether it's a case for a business fighting for its economic life, a crippled plaintiff who can no longer support himself or his family, parents fighting for the custody of a loved child, or a person accused of a crime with his life and liberty at stake, we rule individual case by individual case, with each individual having only that one chance for justice. In every case, someone loses. Fairness, impartiality, and a level playing field, not subject to outside influence or manipulation, not dependent upon a pre-existing promise, are the absolute necessity for what we do. With this in mind, we need to talk about the Missouri plan for selecting judges. The plan was adopted by the people by initiative petition in 1940. It was in response to the Pendergast political machine's attempt to control the Missouri Supreme Court. It was a plan established by the people to protect their courts from political manipulation and control. For those of you who are new to the legislature, let me explain how the plan works. For vacancies on the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, there's a 7-member commission. The commission is made up of 3 lawyers, elected by lawyers from the eastern, western, and southern part of the state. The lawyer's role is to safeguard the professional quality of the candidates. The lawyers serve 6-year staggered terms. The commission also has 3 members who cannot be lawyers, appointed by the governor, again, for staggered 6-year terms. They evaluate the candidates from the point of view of regular citizens of Missouri. Do you go to church or synagogue? Do you mow your lawn? To the extent that these commissioners are appointed by the governor, they reflect the political mood of the state. Finally, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court serves on the Commission. In my experience, the Chief Justice functions neither as a lawyer nor as a layperson, but as a representative of the judiciary as a whole. The Nominating Commission for Trial Judges has one less lawyer and non-lawyer, and the presiding judge of the Court of Appeals replaces the Chief Justice. The Commission evaluates the applicants. It screens out those who, from a legal or any other point of view, might not be the best choice to be a judge. It selects the three candidates the Commission believes would be best. The governor may appoint any of the three individuals submitted to him for any reason. The governor's appointee begins to serve immediately, but is subject to a retention vote at the next general election after a year of service, and then again every 12 years thereafter. Missouri Plain judges are accountable directly to the people. The brilliance of the Missouri Plain is that it balances the need for legal ability, everyday common sense, and responsibility to the people in a way that preserves the integrity and the fairness and the impartiality of the judge. It also checks the power of all concerned, the lawyers, checked by the citizens, checked by the Chief Justice, checked by the governor, and most importantly, it allows a very real check and balance to the people in the retention vote. But in some ways, the quality of a judge is like the quality of justice. It's perceived in the eye of the beholder, colored by the beholder's interest and desires. What one person sees as a great appointment may be criticized by another, perhaps not relative to ability or integrity or fairness, but by a desire for a particular ideological viewpoint or the expectation of a particular type of ruling. The Missouri Plan was created to seek judges of ability, integrity, and fairness, not to lock in any particular viewpoint. There are two alternatives that have been suggested by critics of the Missouri Plan. I'm certain that those who suggest the alternatives are sincere, but I do not believe that they understand the dangers inherent in their suggested alternatives. The worst alternative is direct election of judges. The reason is simple: money. The amount of money involved in conducting statewide races will destroy the public's perception and perhaps the actual integrity of our judicial system. In states that have direct election of judges, it costs about the same to run for the Supreme Court as it does to run for governor. As special interest politics have increased, the amount of money directed to judicial elections has skyrocketed. For the 10-year period from 1990 to 1999, $83.3 million was spent on judicial elections. For the 10-year period from 2000 to 2009, the amount more than doubled to $206.9 million. $83.3 million to $206.9 million. It is even more shocking, maybe not surprising, but shocking, that most of this money comes from a small group of big spenders. A study of 29 elections in the nation's 10 most costly states from 2000 to 2009 showed that the top five contributors in each race invested an average of $473,000 each, while the remaining 116,000 contributors averaged just $805 each. Top five contributors, $473,000 each. There can be no way that much money, so few people, can be good. In fact, a Harris poll released this past September revealed that 70% of Americans, both Democrats and Republicans, believe that campaign contributions had a significant impact on courtroom decisions. Remember the Avery case in Illinois, which an Illinois Supreme Court justice cast a deciding vote in a $450 million lawsuit in favor of a company after receiving about $1 million from people connected to the company for campaign contributions. Remember the Massey case in West Virginia, where a West Virginia Supreme Court justice cast a deciding vote in a $50 million lawsuit after the CEO of that company spent approximately $3 million of independent expenditures to defeat the judge's opponent. Big money in judicial elections is a scandal. I'm not naive. There are political and ideological issues that divide our nation and divide our state. There are issues that people will spend millions of dollars to have their way. It's our strength as democracy to allow the full debate and resolution of those issues by and before the people. But that's a process for you to conduct here in the legislative chambers. It is not a process to be confused with the fair and just resolution of individual disputes. Each case according to its facts. Each case according to the law. Each case with fairness and impartiality. Most importantly, each case the only opportunity for justice for the Missouri citizens involved. Whether rich, poor, black, white, plaintiff, defendant, individual, corporation, prosecutor, accused, Republican, Democrat, independent, or Tea Party, any person in Missouri deserves justice when they come into the courtroom. They deserve a level playing field and a fair chance. They deserve judges who make their decisions based on evidence and law. Not judges who've been influenced by big money contributions from special interests. Judges who have been bought and paid for have not been the Missouri way since 1940. And they should not be the Missouri way of the future. Another suggestion is to adopt a plan modeled after the federal system. That too is problematic. Federal judges have life tenure. They are not subject to retention votes. The federal plan has no commission of lawyers or laypeople to filter the candidates regarding their legal ability, reputation, or simple common sense. It would be a purely political system where only the governor and senators are included. Nominees would probably have to hire lobbyists and consultants. I'm sure you can imagine the bargaining that might take place involving issues wholly unrelated to the nominee. You don't have to imagine the gridlock that takes place when the Senate is controlled by one party and the governor of another. In 2002, then Attorney General John Ashcroft gave a speech where he declared that the federal system has broken down because the United States Senate would not act upon President Bush's nominees for judges. That may well happen again with President Obama's nominees. What would happen here for nominees between May and January? Delay? Or special session after special session after special session. Modifications to the federal system might attempt to solve these problems, but they would only increase the uncertainty and risk of how a federal plan might work in Missouri with untested modifications. Other, more measured changes might also be proposed to the Missouri plan. Changes that preserve the structure of the plan, but focus on the political balance of the commissioners, the timing of the commissioners' terms, or the number of nominees on the panel submitted to the governor. Such changes might be less dangerous, but they are still fraught with the risk of unintended consequences. Everybody knows the kind of judge they want, but you're never quite sure of what you might get. The greater the change, the greater the number of changes, the greater the risk. In the past 2 years, the court has taken great strides to increase the transparency of the Missouri plan, to make it more open to the people. Last year, we amended the rules to release the names of the applicants. This year, we amended the rules to open the interview process to the public, to release the final vote for the panel of nominees, and to encourage nominations directly from the public. These changes will allow the people of Missouri to see for themselves how the Missouri plan works, to see the choices it makes when presenting a panel of nominees to the governor. These were significant and good changes to increase transparency. Both Kansas and Iowa have followed our lead and opened their interviews to the public. A detailed study published in May of 2008 titled, "Is the Missouri Plan Good for Missouri? The Economics of Judicial Selection," authored by Professors Joshua Hall and Russell Sobel, noted, "A growing literature in economics has found that judicial independence and quality matter for economic growth across countries and states." Most significantly, they concluded, "Based on our analysis, Missouri's current system is far superior to several of the alternatives, such as partisan elections, nonpartisan elections, and gubernatorial appointment, with approval only of some type of executive council." Justice is sacred but fragile. It belongs to the people, not to either political party, not to any special interest. A system of justice is necessary to support our economy and to preserve our individual rights and freedoms. A system of justice can exist only so long as the people have trust and confidence that it is fair and impartial. Any proposed change to the Missouri plan should be considered only with the greatest care and caution. I'm afraid that it is more likely that any change will bring more harm than good. Each of you has been chosen by your fellow citizens to come here and represent them in government. It is a great honor that they have bestowed upon you. It is an honor that comes with great responsibility. Do not take for granted your importance. What you do will make a difference, not in theory, not in political sound bites, but in the real lives of the people of Missouri, now and for years to come. Having served for nearly 18 years, I understand your sacrifices. I understand some of your pressures. I understand your best intentions. I truly respect you all for your willingness to serve. This is not an easy job. I know that each of you want to do your best. I know that each of you want to do what is right and good. It's not my place to advise you on most matters, but preserving a system of justice in Missouri that our people can have faith and confidence in, that cannot be bought, is something that's right and good. Reforming our criminal sentencing practices to save millions and millions of dollars, to break the cycle of addiction and crime, to make Missouri a safer place, is something right and good. It should be done It's something you and your families and all the people of Missouri can be proud of. Thank you.